but your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. This is George Butler. We're doing two rebroadcasts. The first hour is with Dr. Andrig out of Minnesota, and he's written a book on the causes of war, and it is really a good book. We'll have that posted on this website, so you can go in there and download a free copy of that. Then the second hour was with Dr. Fred Bell. He passed away a year or so ago, and he's very insightful. He's coming from a lot of alternative truths and things like that. Very, very interesting individual to listen to. But Charlotte and I, we hosted both nights, and it was quite an interesting these two interviews back to back. What's happening out there in America today? My gosh, we've just had a bill sponsored, an omnibus spending bill, a funding bill, I guess is the way that they're describing it. But my gosh, what's inside that bill? They're admitting that they don't even read these bills anymore, so I have a solution for that. I think what we ought to do is stop teaching reading as one of the three you know what I mean? Reading, writing, and arithmetic, one of the three R's. And just quit teaching our children to read, because by the time they get to Congress, they don't need the skill there because they're not reading the bills. So let's just do that then. And that might prove to be more, you know what I mean, resourceful with our time and efforts and so forth. Other news, gosh, this is a funny one. Sony suspends filming after hackers hit payments. You know what? The Hollywood studio that made the James Bond and the Spider-Man films has abandoned shoots after hackers crippled its computer network and leaked four films and thousands of documents. Agencies filming for Sony Pictures have canceled shoots because the problems have left it unable to process payments, a source told The Times. Oh, my gosh, that's terrible, isn't it? Terribly good, I think. To heck with Hollywood. They put out a bunch of really crap as far as I'm concerned. Hollywood, uh-uh. It's not redeeming. It's not uplifting. It's not anything that we can be proud of. Occasionally they'll do To Killing a Mockingbird or something that does have real essence to it and real, you know what I mean, effort made to make a very, very beautiful film and so forth. But overall, no, uh-uh. Getting back to this bill that was just passed by Congress and this evening, yesterday, it was being passed by the Senate. Okay, now, the bill has in it there one item of discussion that was very, very hotly debated, and it's amazing that the Democrats, like Pelosi and them, objected to it. But what it was that it was the banks put in a provision in there to shield themselves against losses of their derivative portfolio. Now, what's very important about this is that over the years, the banks have mounted up a tremendous, into the billions of dollars, totally together, collectively together, trillions of dollars worth of losses in the derivatives markets. And they started took off any controls and let them merge with Wall Street. The banks and Wall Street became one and the same, and they went casino on us. And when they went casino on us, then that gave them the ability to speculate wildly, of which they did do. Thus, many of our largest banks have tremendous losses that are being covered up on their books. We have 36 bankers all of a sudden that die, and there's a list that Zero Hedge has going. There's one name on that list, and these people just didn't die because they killed themselves. They allude all of these deaths to being suicides. Yeah, there was one lady in Paris that jumped off the 14th floor after talking to her immediate superiors. They had an argument about something. You think that's why she lost an argument, so she jumped off the 14th floor? Are you kidding me? What's happening is that there are many, many cover-ups occurring at the highest levels in the banking sector. And they had to do with LIBOR, L-I-B-O-R, London Interbank Offered Rate, and also these derivatives, I feel, are also a sticking point and a bone of contention within the banking sector. So what you have is that you have people that are all of a sudden dying. Are you kidding me? You know what I mean? Yeah, sure. There are photographs now with Boehner and our, you know, esteemed Speaker of the House and Obama. They finally got their bill through, didn't they? You know, and they got all the pork in there and all the spending. They even got the shielding for the derivatives for the bankers. But I mean, when is the spending gonna end? When is the spending gonna be curtailed? It's not being curtailed. It's not ending. It's just ongoing and ongoing. It's never ending. So what happens to the country? We're spending money we don't have, but we said that over and over. I mean, the people, part of the alternative press and media like myself and Alex and others, we keep harping on this, but are the people listening out there? I felt so compelled along with Farrell Montgomery and others that helped us put on a Fukushima. Dr. Group came in. John B. Wells came down to master ceremonies the second day. Dr. Group was the first day. So we get out there and we publicize it fairly well this time. And we have just, 40 or 50 people at the very, very most. It was rainy and cool that day and cold. So, but otherwise we did have, 2,000 or 3,000 people on viewing this. So that's probably where we hit a home run on this. But it's surprising and it's disheartening to see, and I think John B. Wells made a point of it on the second day, that was the 15th of November. He says, boy, there ought to be hundreds of people packed into this room, and there should have been. David Knight came to speak that second, and Richard Reeves was there with some fine input in sort of a give and take with David Knight. And Ty Bollinger spoke about, you know, problems of cancer and so forth. I went with 2 days, the first day on Ebola, and the second day was on Fukushima. My gosh, it's worse than it's ever been. There should have been students flooding in there wanting to with pamphlets that we were giving out and getting up and asking questions and so forth, but they weren't. There was an earlier Ebola speech across on the campus, across the street. We were at the University Baptist Church, and so there was an officially ordained, you could say. I guess that means that it's just a divine truth from God Himself, you know, out here on the UT campus, right? And so That was an ordained truth out there. We were given the alternative truth about Ebola and the whole rotten mess, and not many people attended. So just crying a little, I guess. I shouldn't be, because we did have about 3,000 people view it on the web, and that was live, and it came off pretty well. Well, we all got up and said our piece, you know what I mean? And the night was ended by David Knight with a very gracious and insightful speech. And Richard Reeves got up and they went one-on-one with each other and a little give and take. And their friends, formerly working together at InfoWars. And you couldn't have, we couldn't have ended with a better, you know what I mean, ending speaker than David Knight. He was out there at the Bundy Ranch and stood up against the feds and everything else. So it overall, pretty happy with it. I'm sorry that, you know, sometimes I get a little frustrated because I want to, I want to spread the word a little bit better than I have been, see. And I don't always attain that success. The second thing during the month of November was that I participated along with Farrell Montgomery in producing. We didn't produce the conference, but we did the video and handled the audio and things like that and the web streaming of the JF conference up in Arlington, Texas at the Sheraton Arlington there. And so that seemed to fill out the month for us. And it did, we had similar, we had thousands of people also view that. So maybe many of these people are beginning to click on these free, views of, and we did this, for the Fukushima was free. And also the JFK conference up in Arlington was also free. We found it it's problematic at times to try to charge for any of this. People, you know, are so used to so many free different viewing videos and so forth on the web these days that it's just not very easy to charge for some of these conferences. The value and the content of our conference, I will not I'll hold it up to anyone's speculate. I mean, anyone that wants to look at this and come in later, we do not have all the video up yet because it's just time consuming. Farrell Montgomery did report to us. We had Chris Emery, marketing executive of Free Mind Films, along with Mary Ellen Moore. They spoke very nicely. David Knight finished up. Oh, we had a very excellent interview with Dr. Robert Rowan, okay? And he is an expert. He came in from a conference, and he did make it, too. The guy is very capable, and he's the father of medical freedom. He pioneered in the nation's first law protecting alternative medicine up in Alaska. But he treats people with ozone, and he was over in Sierra Leone treating people for Ebola, and they shut down the clinic that he was just beginning to open up. The very day that he was opening up, they closed him down. I mean, so he had quite a lot to say. Ty Bollinger, like I said, he's got a fine family. The guy's a stand-up, brought family with him. Man, I'll tell you what, this family man, isn't it? Bringing his family to our conference. And our family and our conferences are family-friendly and RCA all the way. We don't curse in there, and we say words and concepts that children would appreciate in the long run. John Rappaport also, we Skyped him in from San Diego. He had a lot to say. I mean, the guy is really an investigative reporter. We also had Dana Dunford reporting on his own survey up on the Vancouver Island. Like I said, John B. Wells said some fine stand-up things. Alexei Nestorenko, we have a report from him. I've got to put up on the site. Dr. Edward Group the Third started it off on the first day. Farrell Montgomery gave a report, and so forth and so on. And then also Lieutenant Steve Simmons spoke, and that was a very, very poignant telling of what he was up against in trying to get treatment for his he was exposed while off the coast of Fukushima in March of 2011, and it debilitated him, and he's no longer able to walk. He's in a wheelchair. He came in and got into a rent car and zipped all over Austin, though. So he does have some mobility like that. We just had a very insightful conference. The JFK thing was even more hard-hitting up in Arlington, Texas. We had a couple of authors that spoke on LBJ. I think I aired one of those, St. John Hunt. E. Howard Hunt's son spoke, and very insightfully on his father's deathbed confession. So look for that in the future. We'll put click-offs on these videos and so forth. But St. John Hunt, I think we aired that a couple of weeks ago, right after we were up there in Arlington, Texas. So we did have a pretty good conference on Ebola and Fukushima. I took the Fukushima conference concept too, and opened up the first day to Ebola and so forth. If you go to that site, FukushimaSolutions.com, FukushimaSolutions.com, there's a contribution thing. Give us some money if you got some extra. Go ahead and read the West Coast survey. The links are in there. Under links, you're going to find some very astounding things that are happening in Fukushima today. We're keeping those. Also, Ebola resources is there also as far as click-offs go. So go in there and start looking at some of these things, and you'll be able to get updated from there. And you can just go in there and you'll see where our links go to, and then you can go directly back in later to some of those other ones. We are continuing to put very truth-filled programs out. We're not going to let up on this. I just talked to Charlotte this afternoon, and she's going to be traveling to Virginia to have a nice Christmas up there with relatives. And we're going to stay here. Myself and my family will be here in Austin, and we intend to have a dinner put on and so forth. The second hour tonight is Dr. Fred Bell. That's more esoteric. He's had all kinds of experiences with UFOs and alien types of entities. He's also been in alternative medicine longer, much longer than anyone that I know personally. So he has an extensive knowledge. He has passed away. Now, he passed away while he was still up in Minneapolis, right after he did an interview with Jesse Ventura. One thing I didn't want to forget was that at the JFK conference in Arlington, Jesse Ventura did Skype in, and we got an excellent interview and some very fine pronouncements from Jesse Ventura. Like I said, we had a couple of authors on Roger Stone was one on LBJ's involvement, and we had Nelson with another man that's written a book on LBJ involvement in the JFK assassination. And all of this stuff is coming out now about the different entities that were involved in the JFK, and it wasn't just one lone nut in a window up on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. All of that is just a bunch of hype and crap and lies, see. But every year, and even this year at the Texas Book Festival, they always bring in these people that continue to foster the myth of JFK assassination with a bunch of lies. And boy, they did it again this year, you know what I mean? And you can go on C-SPAN and you can just see what. Oh, I know what. The confrontation that is interesting this year is between John Dean and Roger Stone. Roger Stone got up at the stand-up guy that he is and confronted John Dean, you know, about his involvement in the Watergate, and that he used it as a method to take out Richard Nixon as president. And he denied that, and then he came back. He said, yeah, no one around here believes that LBJ killed JFK. And everybody chuckled and looked at each other and started smiling and everything. So I'm afraid the Texas Book Festival's got a long way to go to attain truth as far as I'm concerned. They're not even close to it. Last year they brought up a couple of put-up guys that reiterated the magic bullet theory. And one guy got up and asked the question to the former, Warren Commission investigator. And he said, won't you explain that magic bullet theory to us? We'd like to hear some more about that. And the crowd was just laughing under their breath like, yeah, nobody's going to believe in any magic bullet theory anymore. And the American public and the Texans out here, we're not a bunch of fools like we used to be. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this first hour with Dr. Andrig on the causes of war, in the second hour with Dr. Fred Bell. And we wish you a merry holiday period. We're going to have a few more weekends coming up for this year. But thank you very much for listening tonight. And God bless each and every one of you. And you must stand on truth, whether it's JFK, Ebola, Fukushima, whatever it is, let's stand on truth. Thank you for listening tonight, and God bless each and every one of you.
And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm Charlotte Littlefield.
And I'm George Butler. Welcome to the show.
All right, George, how are you tonight?
Okay, fine, Charlotte. How you been doing? All right?
I'm good, thank you. We got a fabulous guest this evening.
Yeah, we have Dr. Michael Andrig. And he spent much of his life, his time as a geneticist. Then later on, he grabbed hold of another very important career as a professor of justice and peace studies at the University of St. Thomas and lecturer at the University of Minnesota. And we're going to be bringing him on in just a few minutes.
Right. Okay, great. Welcome to our listeners tonight. Glad to have you with us. Before we get started on the show, I wanted to go over a little bit about what we discussed last week about the paper ballots and hand-counted votes pertaining to the group of, basically this is a group of groups, if you will. A lot of people have come together from around the country and are getting behind one particular letter to amend H.R. 550. Basically, H.R. 550 is a bill that's being introduced by, it's called the Holt Bill. It's a piece of federal legislation to amend the Help America Vote Act to address certain electronic voting equipment standards and security. The amendment, the H.R. 550, the Holt Bill, does not go far enough. Unfortunately, what it is putting technology standards, making technology standards the standard, if you will, rather than the standard of democracy, the standard of integrity, and knowing that one vote was counted correctly and was accounted for through the whole system without discrepancy. Also, we've got, there's another point to this, that would be the voter verified paper ballots. They have a system they're proposing in the H.R. 550 and that isn't going to work. Basically, we need to get hand-counted paper ballots that are voter marked, okay, not voter verified. There's a difference. They want to be able to print a receipt. Well, if you get, you know, a voter verified paper ballot, you are printed a receipt, the piece of equipment can still send forward information that it does not match the receipt. These are not ATM machines. It's completely different. We cannot count on, just because we get a receipt, the vote is still counted inside that machine. You can't physically verify the vote. All you're going to be able to do is print another report, if you will. Also, one of the differences, one of the things this letter advocates is getting the count right on election night. There have been tremendous problems with the electronic voting machines, everything from overcount, undercount, wrong count. The machines have a tendency to mess up, and we can't have that in our democracy. We need to slow down. We need to do it accurately. We need to make sure that every person's vote is accounted for and is hand counted by people, and that those tallies are, you know, sent forward. Even though we're living in an age of great technology and everything, that technology is not secure. It can be easily manipulated, and we need to fight for the integrity of our vote and our democracy. Also, right now, with these electronic voting machines, what we're having is sort of a corporation oversight. or industry oversight instead of citizen oversight. We've turned over our electronic voting, we've turned over our voting, the process of voting, our right to vote to corporations who oversee, hold the codes, and basically determine the outcome in the elections. This is completely unacceptable. We have to have paper ballots counted, hand counted by people, even if it takes longer, it doesn't matter. We need that for the integrity of the vote to make sure that all our votes are counted and that everybody that did vote gets the assurance that there isn't some sort of corruption or computer error that, you know, they vote and it just disappears. They don't know. No, we don't need that. What we need is hand-counted paper ballots. And I hope that if you agree with me, you'll go to wethepatriots.org. That's wethepatriots.org. And go ahead and read the letter that they're sending. They being the, they're a group of groups. I know for sure it's the Vote Rescue, Austin, Texas. Also the authors of Hacked, High-Tech Election Theft in America. Plus, I think some groups from all around the country. I guess I could add to that blackboxvoting.org, which would be Bev Harris.
Bev Harris, yeah, she's great at that.
Right. So, at any rate, please go check it out. In addition to this letter being, they're trying to change the Holt bill, and they're trying to amend it properly. In addition to the letter, they're also sending a copy of their book. And I would appreciate if you would please go investigate this and look into it for yourself. And if you can and you agree, please sign the, it's called the letter, it's a request by voters. So, hope you can do that. It'd be really great. Let's see what else we got going tonight. I'm really looking forward to our guest here in a little while. But in the meantime, oh, George, I forgot to mention our second guest. We have Dr. Fred Bell also.
Yes, we have Dr. Fred Bell, and he's Paradigm Company. Paradigm.com is his site. And he's very interesting in a lot of different ways. He's also quite eclectic. He's invented a collector, a nuclear collector, that he calls it, and it's patented. Receptor, it's actually called a nuclear receptor. And he's an author of several other books and so forth. And he's going to be coming on in our second hour. But right now, we're experiencing a little technical difficulty in receiving our feed from the network. But we're going to go ahead and start talking about this subject a little bit. Dr. Michael Andrig has written a book called On the Causes of War. And he has three green lights. He has a three green light model in there. And according to Dr. Andrig, there are three different green light characteristics. Number one, decisions by leaders of a government, support from a population, and physical means for killing weapons. If these are three green lights are reciprocated in the targeted nation or group, the result is genocide. If they are reciprocated, the result is war. And so this is what we're going to be talking about a little bit later on tonight. We have, next week, we have a guest by the name of Lynn Horowitz. So that's, for our listening audience out there, that is someone that we just cannot let slide. And you need to tune in next week also, because Lynn Horowitz has a lot to say on issues. So we're going to be taking a break here in a second, see if we can get some of our technical difficulties ironed out, and we're going to be right back. House gases are important also. But we're seeing a tremendous change over a short period of time in the last few years.
Yeah, that's kind of made pretty clear in Al Gore's movie, The An Inconvenient Truth. One good thing about the movie was it did show the carbon dioxide levels.
Yes.
Carbon monoxide or dioxide?
Carbon dioxide. I believe that the documentary in movie form was very informative, and especially when he showed these grass with these big spikes. And it sort of occurred to me that the spikes are being caused by the sun changing. And I believe it's the constituents of the sun that are changing and causing this rapid heating effect. That does not dismiss geophysics too of the Earth itself, where you've got underground.
He's just gonna punch us in live.
Huh?
He's just gonna punch us in live.
Okay, fine.
We're back. We got our guest.
Give us a countdown then.
No, we're in, George.
We're in? Okay, Dr. Andrig, are you there?
Can you hear me?
All right.
Yeah. Fine. We've had a little technical difficulty on our ISDN line.
I've been listening.
Well, you know, we're sort of new at this too, Doctor.
That's all right.
But we try hard, and that's Charlotte. She's a champion, I tell you. She was racking that dang language, kept it going there during our worst spell. But welcome to our program.
Well, that's the way you get a mule to work anyway. I came from a ranching family in Nevada, actually, so I'm familiar with little obstacles on the way.
Okay. Well, let's see. You started out as a research geneticist. Is that correct?
Right.
How did you
Minnesota to do genetics.
Well, how did you get from there to writing this book and into this new sphere of this new career of yours?
Yeah, that's actually the simplest thing I can answer, because I just decided that war was a larger public health hazard than the rare diseases that I worked on. And those diseases are very sad for the families involved, but they only affect a few people in the big picture, whereas war is killing off about 400,000 people a year in the world and has other big consequences. So I decided to figure out why war started.
Well, I want to thank you for changing your in the midstream there, horses in the midstream, because this book is a wonderful book.
And well, I appreciate you looking at it and letting people know about it.
I've been working in this area for 38 years.
My goodness.
And looking at and reading, I have probably 300 books that I've read over that period of time. And we were sort of wanting to concentrate on this one chapter in part two, chapter 19, I think it is.
Before we get into it, though, gentlemen, sir, can you please give your website out to the listening audience?
Oh, sure. It's not a very fancy one, but the address is gzmn.org. As in Ground Zero, Minnesota, gzmn.org.
And actually, I was hoping before we dive into this too deep, the audience should know that your book is available for download.
Right, it's on there free. We're a nonprofit, an education nonprofit, have been around for 24 years, and modern technology makes it possible to give our stuff away, so we do most of that.
Right. This book is very in-depth. I don't know how many chapters. It's an amazing amount of information.
36 chapters.
Amazing information, well-written, very high level, yet, you know, the layman obviously can follow as well, but it's an academic book. And
we're proud of it. It won a national award. I want you to brag for me, but we're very happy about it.
It was published in what year, Doctor?
Well, it was first published in 1997, and then it won this national award, and so it was republished in 99. And it's been published again in Canada and in Italy, but an Italian version won't help people very much.
I understand.
But,
National Peace Writing Award, right, in 1999?
Right.
That's quite an accomplishment there.
Well, for me, I never intended to be a writer. The idea of writing a book was about as much fun as jumping into boiling oil to me. So I'm very happy that after all that work, someone appreciated it.
Very glad you wrote it.
It's timely.
It is timely, especially this thing has accelerated, has it not?
At the risk of the danger is accelerating right now.
This
but
thing, I meant the danger.
As a technical matter, the number of wars in the world is going down ever so slightly over the years right now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not enough to celebrate yet.
Oh, we're in considerable danger. I'm actually as worried for the United States today as I was in 1982. Last time I was this worried was in 1982 because of the overall picture in the world. But the number of wars is less, and the actual number of deaths per year is a little less than it was back then.
Doctor, can we get into this spies, cults, and secret power systems chapter? I think that was one of the most interesting chapters I've read. And in that first few paragraphs, you say something about a way of thinking. What do you mean by that?
Sure. we're going to end up, and I'm happy to talk about spies, cults, and secret power systems, or evil, which is another unusual chapter that people focus on, and it's relevant to these times. But I do want to mention that there's another chapter called Revenge that hardly anyone talks about, but I mention it because it relates to your idea of forgiveness. Through forgiveness, we awaken transforming, etc., information and knowledge into wisdom.
Right.
That revenge is a very powerful psychological cause of war, and you've tied on to one of the great antidotes to that, one of the great cures. So I just wanted to mention that, because once we start talking about spies, it's hard to talk about anything
else.
Well,
actually, George, before we dive, I would like to ask you a question about that. How would you institutionalize forgiveness, or the concept of forgiveness?
Well, institutionalize is the hard word there. I mean,
culturize.
It's impossible. And I'll give you an immediate example. In criminal justice, regular criminal justice, there's a emerging idea called restorative justice. And all that means is that for the lower crimes, the ones where no one's been really hurt seriously, I'm not talking about assault or rape or murder, but petty crimes, putting a lot of work into trying to get the offender to do restitution to whoever they stole from or vandalized or whatnot, and understand as a human being the consequences to the community, and then to be forgiven by the community after they've gone through a process. That turns out to be a whole lot more work on the front end.
Welcome back, Dr. Andrig.
Howdy.
Okay. Hey, what we're going to do, we're going to take your lead on this, and we're going to go to that chapter called Revenge. How's that sound?
Anything you want to do. There's a lot of...
Well, let's do that. Could you expound a little bit on that?
Well, I think everyone understands revenge at a personal level, because we've all felt the desire for it when we get wronged.
Yes, sir.
But it also has a great presence in the world that we watch today. The conflicts between the Arabs and the Jews, for example, have been going on for a long, long, long time on the basis of the idea of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And even within each of these areas, but especially the Sunni-Shiite split that gets talked about a lot these days, well, they've been killing each other for over 1,300 years over what was originally one murder of one man over 1,300 years ago, and that's the beginning of that particular feud. But there are hundreds of others in history.
Right. So the beginning of the chapter, there's the quote from Mahatma Gandhi, an eye for an eye carried on long enough, and eventually a whole nation is blinded.
That's his answer to the theory that an eye for an eye is the best way to achieve justice. And he's pointing out what happens if everybody does that and never stops. And I agree, but in these great philosophical issues, there's usually a balance and a middle ground that is the way to go. In other words, there are some times when you have to respond if people are attacking you, and respond to defend yourself or your country. But making that the first habit or the first thought leads to a very violent country, and we know many of them in the world. They're not very prosperous.
Right. When we declared that we were going to go after Iraq and seek justice in Afghanistan and everything, I honestly, when I was watching it on the television, I felt that it was more of revenge than justice.
Well, there's
and
an example.
It happened so swiftly.
If you want a justice alone, then you can only go after Osama bin Laden and his particular gang, if they're the guilty parties. You shouldn't be bombing other people in another country like Iraq that really had nothing at all to do with 9/11, and that's been completely admitted now by our government.
Right.
Wasn't at the time, but...
There's a study that came out of the CSIS, Center for Strategic and International Studies.
That's a very reputable group in D.C.
And they showed a tremendous debt that Iraq had before we invaded.
Well, they did have an enormous debt. They'd come off of a... Well, they fought an 8 years war with their neighbor, Iran. That's back in the 80s, which pretty much bankrupted their treasury. But that was a terrible thing on its own. But then they made the stupid mistake. Hussein Singh was a very bad man, and he did invade Kuwait, and that was a terrible thing. That really bankrupted them. Then they sat around for 12 years in a kind of limbo condition where we had no-fly zones in the north and the south, and they had economic restrictions all around, and nobody was very happy. We dropped a couple bombs on them every week. But not any big deal for 12 years. Can you imagine an economy going along like that? So they were a very broke country before we invaded this last time.
This study showed $383 billion worth of obligations, either contractual debt or war or Gulf War compensations.
Well, I'm not sure how up to date that is, but
well, that it's not that nearly that much now, because I think there have been some forgiveness of debt, some institutions, some countries.
Right.
Have written off some of this debt.
But that is a problem, really, in much of the world. The debt is a huge engine of, tension also. That's a whole other subject area, how international and other finances relate to these issues.
I know in the Spies chapter, you do touch on the Federal Reserve. What kind of problem has that been? Has that been part of the debt problem?
You know, there's whole libraries of books written about that, and the opinions of authors vary. So I'm just going to tread carefully in that area and say that I think that nations should have a central bank for reasons the bankers can, you know, describe very easily. But I do think also that our government has lost control of its basic money management. And that's a terrible force in America today.
Well, they don't coin the money.
I understand.
I think they pretty much handed it over rather than
a lot of very wealthy people collect a lot of interest off of that debt every day.
Right.
And I don't really think that helps the country.
No, it's a monopoly of money creation, and that has been a real problem for us over the years.
Right.
Now, since we talk about sad things, that's a very sad thing and a very tough problem for people to face. I always want to end with a little solutions thought, and being a self-sufficient citizen and being a productive neighbor to your neighbors and an asset to your community, that's something individuals can do. And I just recommend it, because if you're not yourself up to your eyeballs in debt, you're a lot more able to help your neighbor, and you're a lot less vulnerable to whatever the banks are wanting people to do today.
Right.
So you look at a conservative way as a good solution to be very conservative in your debt creation. Is that right?
Yeah, I avoid the terms conservative and liberal when I
okay.
can, but I don't care. This is more of a rancher's way of dealing with the world, I would say. It's being able to take care of yourself and be a good neighbor, but not be living in debt. This idea that you get wealthy by running out to a bank and getting in debt first is kind of a strange idea to me.
It's not that complicated,
this part.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And people are, well, it's that credit card stuff that's just it's ruinous for a lot of people.
You know, I produced 56 television programs. We haven't talked about that and really shouldn't. But one of them in 1994, the title was Debt. And it's just a half-hour primer for graduating high school seniors and young college students about credit and interest and principal. Because no one teaches them about that in the high schools. And then they graduate, and all the banks have bought the names of the graduates and bury them in credit cards. And I think that's just
well, they do the same thing to the young military members.
Right, right.
And,
basically, the young adults go out there, and they're like sheep going up the ramp.
Yeah, they are processing them through, right?
Yeah, well, what makes it so horrible is it's compound interest. It's the way it, you know, keeps escalating
right.
and growing. It's almost unfair, or, you know, it's a slight.
I think there's such a thing as reasonable rates and
correct,
usurious
right.
rates, like the Bible mentions, and very high rates, which is what usury used to be illegal. That's what it means.
Right. George, I thought, and maybe you know, sir, that didn't the scripture at some point, some sacred writing, whether it was in the,
oh, yeah, the
Quran
Bible
or whatever, forgiveness of debt on a certain schedule
actually,
of sorts?
Yeah, that's actually Old Testament. That's in the Jewish scripture.
There's a prose bull that was put forward, you know.
I am not a big Bible
scholar. The sabbatical,
My memory is that they had every 50 years a jubilee in which debts were forgiven and other things were done to restore equality or rough equality to the community.
Well, I believe the 7-year sabbatical on the beginning at the beginning of the 7th year, debts were forgiven, slaves were released, and I believe land was to lay fallow for that 1 year during that 7th year.
And I think also you couldn't
now,
create
now the jubilee ancestral lands would return to the original family.
Uh huh.
That's the way that.
See, you know a lot more about that than I do.
And then they instituted about 30 years before Jesus. They instituted what they call a prose bowl.
Uh-huh.
And this was a way to circumvent the that particular loaning during that 7th year.
I see.
It's prosbul for our listening audience if they want to look it up. But the Judica Encyclopedia has a very good treatment of this in that online version of it.
Yeah, I don't know the Old Testament nearly as well as you do.
Well, I can't say I know it that well either.
I wouldn't say Jordan knows that well at all. He's a banking money guy.
I made it a point to get into the money, you know, just see what's going on. And one of my little sayings is that the compounding of evil. It's one of my little sayings.
It does happen.
It does happen.
When we get back, there's a little line here. It talks about there is a single principled reason for revenge, to stop the unprincipled bully or bullying of nations. When victimizing others.
We'll be right back, Doctor. Thank you very much. Right. And this is getting interesting. Thank you. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler.
And I'm Charlotte Littlefield.
And we've got Dr. Andrig, Michael Andrig, on the line. And, Doctor?
Yes, sir.
You wrote a paper on how wisdom differs from intelligence and knowledge.
My goodness. You've been searching around. Yes, I did. I wrote that for some spies.
Oh, you did. Now, that's very interesting. You've attended many of these seminars. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you've tried to reach out to the intelligence and security communities
for about 20 years. I know several hundred of them.
And what kind of feedback are you getting from these individuals?
Well, it varies. They are a very interesting and different group of people. I guess the short thing I can say is next week I'm flying to D.C., to Washington, D.C., to attend an intelligence ethics conference. Well, that idea, intelligence with morals, is a little bit shocking to many people in the spy community and in the rest of the world. But my point is that I tend to work with the most thoughtful and, I hope, brightest members of that strange community. And I and many others have been encouraging them, a few others, I should say, to really look at moral thinking and how it applies to even the issues that they deal with. And slowly, over time, we're making some progress at actually developing a professional ethic for spies and other intelligence professionals. They prefer to use the term intelligence professional, by the way. Spy is kind of a
dirty word.
A naughty term, yeah.
You're actually practicing forgiveness when you're doing this, reaching out to them, aren't you?
In many respects, yes. There's a bunch of positive biblical tones to it. Actually, they asked me, my proudest thing isn't actually recently my book that we're talking about on war. I got asked to write the chapter on intelligence ethics for a spy textbook.
Really?
It was just published in Britain earlier this year. So for a peace activist to be invited in to talk to actual intelligence officers.
I like your approach. You haven't given up on these people.
That's a key.
Yeah.
They are people. And we need to have faith in the basic humanity of people and reach out to them and try, like brothers, to find a way to solve our common problems.
That attitude is a very
Christian attitude, I think, and does make a lot of these revenge problems where everyone's hating each other.
A very wise man one time told me that patience is love.
Patience is required.
Boy, and you've had the patience over these years, have you not?
Say again, please.
I bet you've had to exercise patience in this exercise of trying to reach out to these people.
An enormous number of times. Let me tell you, patience is not my strongest trait. So I've failed often. But, you know, these guys are spies. You don't get rowdy rashly with a bunch of spies. Let me tell you, they're tough people.
Right. And,
they have weapons.
Yeah, and it's very difficult because a lot of times they are compartmentalized. You know, it's one of the things.
Yes.
And they don't know. A lot of them, I think, probably still, you know, are perhaps they are clean and they haven't done anything to compromise the integrity of our country or themselves.
There's all different kinds. You know, there's 57 varieties of spies, actually. There's many different kinds, and especially in the United States, where we have 16 different agencies and hundreds of thousands of staff, we have a whole lot of different people in our intelligence community. And I just try to elevate the best in each one of them and among them to see the higher road to protecting the country and so forth.
What we've said several times on this program is that we have some fine individuals, Americans, sitting out there in all kinds of different organizations and institutions, and if we can reach out to them and try to affect some kind of a metanoia.
Well, that's an interesting term. That's a very philosophical
term. See, a change of direction, a heart, right?
A change of heart and a change of, actually, noia in the Latin refers to the global mind. And if I remember correctly, you would be talking about changing the spirit or the attitude of the whole mentality of humankind. And yes, that is the ultimate strategic objective of ending the ruthless, mindless wars on the world.
Well, what I've come up with what a delusional system that way. It's a mode of delusion that we're trapped into. And this mode of delusion hides itself that it is a delusion.
Absolutely.
So the delusion hides the delusion.
And it tends to regard anybody that criticizes it too strongly as nuts.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
I'm sure people have considered you like that over the years, and
some do.
They've called me that before too, but I try to, you know, not worry about it.
That's the best. I try once in a while to engage them, but I try to engage them more like a therapist than debating them.
Right. Well, in our culture, we've made it out like the intelligence community is the end all. It's the highest, you know, you can achieve. It's the, you know, like.
Well, some people have done that.
Well, they probably worship, you know, that's their objective, you know. But the thing about when these people get sucked into it, their honesty is used against them. Their root desires are played around with so that they're given money and things and da 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 and this and that. And I mean, they're used. They go in thinking they're going to control the situation.
Right.
And they can handle this and they can that and they're fast or whatever the deal is. And in the end,
they tend to get chewed up by the process. Did you know that they have extremely high rates of mental illness? That's one of the things I discovered when I went in there. And that they actually, that's one reason that they don't mind having me around, even though I don't have a security clearance, because I can be helpful for troubled people.
Well, the institution itself is misguided.
There's so many problems over there, really. We could spend days. The institution's misguided. It's too compartmentalized. It's too dishonest.
Congress has no oversight.
There's no effective oversight. And 20 other things.
And it's so money-driven, too, so.
That's a big factor. It's really, we have very serious problems there, and fortunately some of the people in there really care about the oath to protect the Constitution and the desire to protect people from real danger. So they are willing to let an outsider come in who truly means well and has a different perspective. And let me mention just one other thing, and I promise I'll stop.
No, go ahead. This is very interesting. Go ahead.
Right at the beginning, Charlotte mentioned that maybe they are kind of blinded by being in their little cubicles and being too compartmentalized. That's one of the best things I can bring to them is I don't have all those security restrictions. I haven't been hiding from information and afraid to talk to people. So sometimes I can give them a more global view.
A very frank and open view, can't you?
Right.
A very objective opinion.
Well, I'm still human. We're all human. We have our prejudices, but I am more objective than someone that is in a particular cubicle in an institution where all the information is controlled and there's a party line. They really can't say something different from the party line. You know what I mean?
Yes, I understand.
And that's very stultifying.
It's very wrong, almost. I mean, that's...
Say again, please?
I would categorize that as, and it's not just in that community, but that's wrong.
Oh, it's wrong, and it's unhealthy. It leads to, it actually induces mental illness, although the bigger factors there are the constant lying and the evil things that some of them, the operators, do some pretty evil things, and that weighs on a person.
Yeah, there's a lot of dysfunctionality.
And they're told it's good, though.
But I think, I look at it on a synergistic basis. I have a concept I call social synergy.
Uh-huh.
And so I see a lot of your influences that you're describing synergistically adding to each other, but in a negative way sometimes.
Right. That's, you know, the life-affirming things, the human body is an example of synergy, positive synergy. The human being is a whole lot more than the sum of the parts, you know, the arms and the legs and the heart and the liver and stuff. You put them all together, that's not anything special, but a human being is, and that's the positive side you're talking about. But there is a negative version, and it leads to a lot of death and destruction.
Yes, it can. And when this delusion that's created or maintained hides itself, it's really difficult to get to see it.
It's very difficult. Right on the front door, they say, "The truth shall set you free."
And one thing you made in one of your other chapter 19 was about the abstractions. And
well,
I see.
Yeah, that's a tough one to explain, but basically you can take abstraction too far, and then some of these very theoretical people get very casual about murdering tens of millions of people for some theoretical objective.
Well, men are more, yeah, we want to invite you back. We're going to be leaving here in a second, but we want to invite you back for a full two-hour session.
And we're so sorry about those technical difficulties. We lost time with you.
But this abstraction thing, I believe that men can abstract to a great extent and then secure these wrong-headed views to support what's wrong in them.
You're talking about professors. We do that a lot.
Well, everyone does that.
Yeah, it is a common failing. It is.
We're going to be leaving, but we want you back sometime, and we certainly appreciate it.